Hariom to all of you. I'm sure you all were surprised by the new traffic directions, and I think that's why a lot of them are late today. Okay, so last week we have completed chapter 1 of the Gita, and just to refresh what we have gone through, in chapter 1, Arjuna, because of his attachment to Bhishma Pitamaha and Dronacharya, he could not bring himself up to fight with them, to kill them, to drive arrows through them. So he didn't want to do his duty as a soldier on the battlefield, and he tried to find many excuses how to get out of doing his duty. And even he looked to Krishna for support, but Krishna was not willing to support him also. So after giving so many excuses, not getting any support from Krishna, in chapter 1, verse 47, we find that this Arjuna, in a state of shoka — the word shoka is used in verse 47 also to indicate his extreme state of sorrow — he sits on the back seat of his chariot and he just remains quiet. He's got nothing more to say. And the greatness of Arjuna is what? Although he has said that he doesn't want to fight in this war, yet what does he do? What should he do? He should leave the battlefield, isn't it? Because he says, I don't want to fight. Then what are you doing on the battlefield? But yet he has made a decision not to fight, yet he still makes a decision not to leave. So this is the greatness of Arjuna, because there is a difference between doubt and wrong thinking. Which is more of a big problem? To have doubts or to have wrong thoughts? Why are doubts better? No, sorry. You say doubts is a bigger problem? It's better to have doubts than wrong thinking. Why is that?
Because with doubts, when you clear your doubts, you can go back to right thinking.
Correct.
Wrong thinking, you're already on.
If you have the wrong thoughts and you commit an action, then it is very difficult to turn back. So when you have doubts or wrong thinking, better to have doubts. So at least you won't act. And this is Arjuna's position. Earlier he had wrong thinking, but now he is starting to have some doubts that did he have the right thinking in the first place. So last week we also discussed the very title of chapter 1 is called Vishada Yoga. Vishada means grief, sorrow. And nobody wants to be in a state of grief or sorrow. Yet chapter 1 tells us that the Vishada can also become a yoga. Yoga is to unite with God. So how, even when somebody is down in the depths of sorrow, how you can turn that sorrow into a sadhana and reach God also? Generally, there are two ways in which people surrender to God. One is what Arjuna was going through: extreme suffering, extreme sorrow. So at times in our life, we also face a lot of sorrow, we face a lot of difficult situations in life. We do not know where to turn to, so we turn to God. So that sorrow, Vishada, becomes a yoga. Vishada yoga. That sorrow turns us towards God. The second general way is, if we value the goal of moksha, if we have some value for the goal of moksha, we want to reach that state, we have a desire to go on the spiritual path. Not because of any sorrow, but there arises a desire in us to lead a spiritual life. Even that also can make us turn towards God also. So in Arjuna's case was sorrow, but in other cases it can be a desire for moksha. And if one wants to turn towards a spiritual path from sorrow, we discussed last week that generally a person has got to go through four stages. So you remember the four stages? The first stage is
you suffer
the problems of samsara. That means you face various problems in your life. So it can be due to attachment, it can be due to your envy, ego, etc. So you face the problems of samsara. Then that is not enough. You have, many people face the problems, but they don't come to the second stage. What is the second stage?
Realizing and accepting.
Realize and accept I have a problem, right? So until you realize that I have a problem, you accept you have a problem, otherwise then you can't move to the third stage. And what is the third stage?
Surrender
to an external or higher force than you. And that surrender, and most people actually, instead of surrendering, even though they realize they have a problem, what do they generally try to do? Huh? Either solve themselves or they blame the external environment, isn't it? A poor man says that lack of money is the cause of all his problems. A bachelor says, because I'm not married is the cause of all my sorrow. A married couple says, because we are childless, we don't have children, so we are in a state of sorrow. So everybody blames the external environment. Now, how do we know the problem is not outside? How do we know the problem is not outside?
The problem's ours.
We are the problem. How do we know the problem is not outside? Because from childhood to now, what have we been trying to do? Every time we face problem, try to change the external. All throughout our lives, we've been going on trying to change the external. It is only the very few, the wise people who realize that there are some things I can change, there are many things I can't change, and thus what do I have to do? Change myself to accept whatever situation I face which I cannot change. So then and only then you surrender with two qualities, honesty and humility. When you have that quality and you surrender, then you come to the fourth stage, which is the actual pursuit of this knowledge. Then only it becomes worthwhile. It has some meaning in your life. Okay? So Arjuna has gone through what? Stage 1. He has suffered the problems of samsara, but he is not. Has he come to accept his problem? No. So he is not ready to accept his problem, and he is not ready to surrender. So that is going to happen soon in this chapter. So that is the stage now, and we come to now chapter 2 verse 1, which is called Sankhya Yoga. The chapter 2 is called Sankhya. I will explain sometime later when we come to the 11 verse number 11 what is exactly Sankhya. So Arjuna has got nothing more to say. He's run out of excuses. Krishna doesn't want to start teaching because
he hasn't surrendered yet.
Arjuna hasn't surrendered, he hasn't asked for advice, he hasn't accepted Krishna as a teacher. So what happens in chapter 2 verse 1, Sanjaya now gives us the commentary of what is happening on the battlefield. Sanjaya Vacha, chapter 2 verse 1. Sanjaya now is describing the very state of this, of Arjuna, this very pathetic state of Arjuna. And what is that state? Here, in the very first line of verse 2, Tam Tatha Kripaya Avishtam. Kripaya here means attachment. It is not compassion, because compassion is a good value. But when we are overpowered by this compassion or this attachment, that is when the trouble starts. So what is Arjuna's condition on the battlefield? Avishtam means to be overpowered by Kripaya. This was the situation of Arjuna, a very pathetic condition. And as I said, when we have emotions is a virtue. There's nothing wrong with having emotions. But being emotional is a vice. When we get carried away by our emotions, we can't control them. That's when we lose control of our decisions also. So that's why a person who is able to control his emotions is called what? One who is in full control of his emotions is called a? A saint. We call them what? Swami. Right or not? Swami. so and so, what we put at the end title? Swami so and so Ananda, isn't it? Because why? His mind is Ananda. So we give the title Swami. So we also can take one more title. What's our title? What is the opposite of Swami? You can say we all a Swami so and so Ananda. Right? A Swami is opposite of Swami. Right? So this is the state of our mind. Right? But one, and this is Arjuna's state here. He was so much overpowered by what we call attachment. Sanjaya says now in the second line, Ashru Purna Kulekshanam. There are four words here. Ikshanam is describing Arjuna's eyes. Ikshanam means eyes. What is wrong with Arjuna's eyes? Ashru, they have tears. And not just one or two trickle of tears, but Purna, it is full of tears. His eyes are literally, he's crying like a baby. Can you imagine such a brave warrior who's gone into so many battles, conquered and defeated so many enemies, killed so many people, now he's sitting there on the battlefield and literally shedding tears. So, Ikshanam, Ashru, Purna, Akula, there's one more word there, Akula. Akula means when your eyes are flooded with tears, what is the result? Your vision is blurred. You cannot see, isn't it? Now, this situation of Arjuna being eyes being flooded with tears is nothing but a manifestation of the state of his mind, isn't it? So, what Sanjaya actually is describing is not so much his physical condition, but this is the state of Arjuna's mind. So if we compare, when the eyes are full of tears, we cannot see. When the mind is flooded with sorrow, we are unable to think or make decisions. Right? The same allegory, if we use the eyes are flooded with tears, our vision becomes blurred. When our mind is overpowered with sorrow, we lose our ability to think or make decisions. And this was Arjuna's situation. Thus, what does Sanjaya say? He says in the third line, Vishidantam. Now Vishada has also taken over. Not only is there Kripaya attachment, that Kripaya which has become overbearing to think of the loss of his beloved people. How am I going to live if I get back this kingdom? I've lost all my beloved people. I can't live without them. Right? He was so much attached to Bhishma, Pita and Dronacharya. And that led him to, even though they had not died, they were still alive on the battlefield. But that thoughts of losing them made him go into a state of sorrow, which is indicated here in line 3, Vishidantam. As you understand, the first chapter was called Vishada, exactly the same word. Right? He was in a state of sorrow. Okay. Krishna is looking at this pathetic fellow sitting down crying there. So, here Sanjaya says, Idam Vakyam. These words were now said to Arjuna. By who? Uvacha Madhusudana. Madhusudana is Krishna. Krishna spoke these words to Arjuna, seeing him in that very pathetic condition. Now in the next two verses, 2 and 3, Krishna uses very harsh words on Arjuna. He does not teach him any knowledge. He is not gentle with Krishna, with Arjuna. But he uses very harsh words. The reason being that since Arjuna is not ready for to listen to reason, right? There's a very nice saying by Thomas Paine, a 17th century philosopher, who said, to argue with a person who has renounced use of reason is like administering medicine to a dead person. Person who's already died, you keep giving him medicine, it's not going to work. So to go and argue with a person who has given up any use of reason, it is not going to work at all. So Krishna plays his role, he is a charioteer, like he whips the horses into action, he wants to whip Arjuna also into action. Get up man, start doing something, fight, why are you crying like a baby here? So he uses very very harsh words on Arjuna to what you call wake him up. So what are the harsh words? What are the harsh words he uses here? Somebody's phone is on. what are the harsh words he uses here in verse number 2? Putastva idam kashmalam. Kashmalam means there is some impurity in you, Arjuna. There is something not correct about you. Because Krishna has been with Arjuna before, he knows his character in and out. He knows he is a brave warrior. He is not a cowardly type of person. So kashmalam means something which is of an impurity in you, right? And samupashtitam, it has come to you, this physical, this is not a physical impurity, it is what? It is a mental impurity. It is not a physical impurity. Kashmala means this mental impurity in you has come. Such type of dejection, frustration, this condition I cannot understand, Krishna is saying. It is not like you, right? Because you are known for your bravery, you are known for your courage. You are not known to be afraid of anything. And not only that, he was having a divine chariot gifted to him by Agni Deva. He had many divine weapons which were given to him by Indra Deva. So he was well equipped to fight the battle. So Krishna says, I can't understand your this condition. And the worst thing is, he says, Vishame. He uses the word Vishame. Vishame means at this critical hour. Critical hour means what? You have gone and done so much of preparations for this battle. So much of effort, so much of preparation. How many soldiers you have mobilized have all come to the battlefield. Conches have been blown. Weapons have been ready. Then at that time, suddenly you say what? I think better we don't fight. Now what about all these fellows here you brought on the battlefield now? You say now it is wrong to fight? So Vishami, this is a critical time. This calls for action. This doesn't call now for you to think about all these kind of philosophical ramblings that you've been having. So it is not the proper time. And he addresses Arjuna, Anarya Justam. So Anarya Justam means you are of a Aryan background. You are a descendant from a great Aryan people. And Aryans are not called Aryans because they are descendant from a particular region. An Aryan, the definition of an Aryan is one who rises to the challenge, who takes up every challenge without flinching. Whether the challenge is an easy one or tough one, he does not look at whether it's a pleasant or unpleasant. An Aryan is one who does his duty whether it is pleasant or unpleasant. So Arjuna is an Aryan. He has that attitude, and that's why Krishna says, I cannot understand. So the very definition of a Kshatriya has come from two words. Chat and Trayate. The word Chat and Trayate put together is called Kshatriya. What it means is one who protects from hurt, not one who attacks. So a soldier is one who protects, who defends. He never provokes a battle. Right? As you all know, in the Mahabharata, the Pandavas try to do everything to avoid the battle. They try to discuss with the Kauravas, they send Krishna as a peace mission, but everything didn't work. So they had no choice but to fight this battle also. So now he is trying to get through to Arjuna. He says, okay, understand this one thing very clearly. If you fight this battle and you die on this battlefield, you will get Swarga, you will get heaven. Because the warrior's code is like that. If you defend honor, you defend your people and you give up your life, then there is Swarga is assured for you. But he says if you decide not to fight and you run away, then when you die, eventually you will get what? A Swargyam. Here he uses the word A Swargyam. Swarga is heaven. When you put the word A in front, it becomes opposite, means the other direction, which is hell. So you will go to hell. You will never get heaven. So look at it from different point of view also. If you fight this battle, you will gain heaven. If you fight and die, you will gain heaven. If you run away and die somewhere else, you will only get hell. And not only that, what is very painful to a warrior, if people see you run away from the battlefield, they will say, there goes Arjuna the coward. He is like NATO, you know, N-A-T-O. You know what's NATO, right? No action, talk only. right? Every time this fellow boasting, because Arjuna used to boast to everybody, when I come to battlefield, I'm going to finish the Kauravas, I'm going to kill all the 100 sons, I'm not going to leave anybody. So much you talk, so much you boast. When the time came from battle, what do the other soldiers see you doing? Quietly running away from the battlefield. So what will they tell you? Akirtikaram. Akirtikaram means you will get unnecessary all kinds of insulting names only. People will talk about you in an insulting way. They will defame you that Arjuna the coward. Arjuna was a useless person, simply talk. When the time came for battle, he ran away. So are you prepared to face all this? Are you prepared to face infamy? Are you prepared to face to go down to hell? So you better think very carefully what you are doing. Still doesn't seem to work on Arjuna. So Krishna has to add in a bit more masala. So in verse number 3, he says, now he uses even more harsh words. He says, Klebhyam masma gama partha. Klebhyam means, how can you insult a male, especially if you want to insult a male? What do you tell him? You unmanly fellow, behaving like a girl, isn't it? You tell him, you know. So to a soldier, somehow, a brave soldier, mighty soldier with muscles and weapons, you tell him you're behaving like a little girl, right? So Klebhyam means you are so unmanly, very unmanly your behavior. It is totally unmanly, a very weak-minded, unmanly behavior. And he addresses him as Partha. And he says that, what does he say here? Now, there is one very beautiful word used here in verse number 3. At the last line, you see the word Utishta. It's a very common word or phrase used in the scriptures by the guru. Whenever the student goes there, they tell him, Utishta, get up, wake up. So what is the master trying to tell the student? Wake up to what? You say, I'm awake. I hope you all are awake, right? So you say, I'm awake. Why you are telling me, Utishta, get up? Get up for what? The mind is in what state then? To wake up the mind, therefore the mind is in what state? Slumber.
Sorrow.
Tamasic state, isn't it? One who doesn't have the right thinking, the mind is overpowered by the tamasic state. Tamasic is slumber, is sleep, is ignorance. So that's why when you go there, the guru first tells you, Utishta, wake up. You are physically awake, but your mind is in a state of tamas. That's why many people get confused, you know, why do we have so many prayers, we have so many fasts, you know, Shivaratri fast, Navaratri fast, Janmashtami fast, this fast, full moon fast, do this, do that, go temple, break coconut, do that. Why? It is to activate you, it is to move you from tamasic state to rajasic state. Because the general people are like that. The scriptures don't give you knowledge straight away. What they do first? Motivate you to go to action. What do you do with little children? Do you tell, come now, sit down, I'm going to teach you Bhagavad Gita chapter 12. Will a child listen? No. So how do you motivate the child? Come with me, sit down, pray, light one joystick, come to temple. Right? You teach them the simple things to start getting them motivated. So that's why also, first of all, we always start with all kinds of spiritual practices, prayers, rituals, etc. The fast also we keep is not because God is happy we don't eat for one day. The fast is for what? To help you discipline your mind. That is to motivate you to do something until you come to the state of knowledge. So here also Krishna uses the word Utishta. Utishta, and he says, Hridaya daurbalyam tyaktva. Tyaktva means to give up. Give up what? Hridaya, the heart, this weak-hearted attitude that you have, this faint-hearted attitude that you have, give up and arise and do something. Fight this battle, Arjuna. Don't behave. This is not the way of your typical or normal behavior. So, Krishna tries all means to motivate Arjuna to fight. But Arjuna, and he calls Arjuna also Paramtapa, very beautiful name for Arjuna. Paramtapa means scorcher of foes, because he had defeated all his enemies previously. So he also had this name. One of the names of Arjuna was Paramtapa. He was the defeater of all his foes. So trying to remind him that this is your glory, this is your past, what you are well known for. But now you are not behaving the right way. But all this has no effect at all on Arjuna. In fact, Arjuna becomes more defensive, because he is now probably so hurt that Krishna I gave you so many reasons why I don't want to fight. You are my charioteer, you are supposed to support me. Instead of supporting me, what do? You scold me some on top of that, isn't it? I need your support at this time. And instead of supporting me, after all the rationale I've given you, on the contrary, you end up scolding me some more. I cannot understand. So now he wants to defend himself. So let us see how Arjuna defends himself also. So how does Arjuna defend himself? He says, Katham Bhishmam, Katham, how am I going to kill Bhishma? Katham Drona, how am I going to kill Drona? He uses the word here in the third line, you see, Pratiyoshami. Pratiyoshami means, how can I kill these very people? How can I shoot arrows into Bhishma? How can I shoot arrows into Dronacharya? Why can't I shoot arrows into them? Because they are Pujarha, they are worthy of my worship. I should be putting flowers at your feet. What do you do to Guru? You do Guru Pada Puja, isn't it? Your elders, what do? You bow down to them and touch their feet. How people like this who I should worship, I should offer flowers and I should touch their feet, you're telling me shoot arrows into them? So it doesn't make sense to me, because I worship these people, I love these people, how can I kill them? And in order to justify his argument, he now addresses Krishna as Madhusudana, which means what? Madhusudana is, Sudana is killer, Madhu is the demon that Krishna killed. And he calls Krishna Arisudana. Arisudana means one who killed all the evil people, bad people. So indirectly, what he is trying to tell Krishna? By calling him Madhusudana, Arisudana, you kill evil people, you kill bad people, you kill demons, and that's why when we argue sometimes with somebody, we tell them our problem, and then that person tells you, I know, I understand your problem because I faced this kind of problem before. Then what do you tell him? Your problem different, my problem different. Yours is a small problem. I am having the most biggest problem nobody has ever had. So same thing Arjuna is trying to tell Krishna. Your problem is you kill demon, you kill bad people. You cannot compare your problem with my problem. Mine is I have to kill relatives, I have to kill Guru. You never killed your relatives. But is it correct?
No, he killed
Krishna.
He killed Kamsa,
which is his own
uncle.
And he also killed Shishupal also, which is his nephew, I think, right? Father's cousin brother, Shishupal. He did kill them. When they became adharmic, he killed them. But here Arjuna is trying to find a way again, an excuse. That Krishna, you don't blame me, I'm not a coward, I'm not faint hearted, I'm not running away from battle, but I cannot kill these people whom I should be worshipping. In fact, at the end of the Mahabharata, before the Mahabharata battle started and Arjuna came out of his delusion, the first thing he did is he shot one arrow towards Bhishma Pita, but he shot it at his feet. The first arrow he made sure landed at Bhishma Pita's feet. The next arrow landed at Dronacharya's feet. You know why? Paying my respect to you, because I have to start this war. I have to kill you also. But before that, I am paying my respect to you also. But he knew very well that I have to kill them also, because they are standing on the opposite side. In fact, Krishna does tell him that there is no point to respect these people, because they have chosen to stand on the side of Adharma. They have prepared to fight on the side of Adharma. When your teacher, goes the wrong way, why do you need to respect such a teacher, isn't it? If your teacher is walking the wrong path, you don't go and respect such a person. On the contrary, you should follow the other way, right? So here again, Arjuna is trying to say his best, but Krishna is still not listening. So he comes up with some more options. You know, the problem is, when you only have to make one decision, it's very easy. If there is only one choice, you don't have to think. But the more options you have, what happens? More confusion. Do I take A? Do I take B? Do I take C? Now Arjuna is getting into more confusion by offering another choice to Krishna. So what does he tell him in verse number 5? He says, Gurun ahatva hi mahanubhavan. Instead of killing my gurus, Guru and Mahanubhavan, these great people, Mahanubhavan, the great people, Hatva means to kill. If I remain here and I don't fight, the Kauravas are going to come here and kill me. So instead, better is I leave this battlefield, and what do I do? Shreya Voktam Baiksham Apiha Loke is better for me to go and take Bhiksha. So the word here, Baiksham, means when we take Bhiksha from one house, we call it Bhiksha. When you take from multiple houses, it is called Baiksham, it's plural. So here is telling Krishna, better for me to fight these people, my gurus and my these great people, better for me to leave the battlefield and go and take a life of Bhiksha also. So don't worry, Krishna, I know how to live. I will survive even if I leave the battlefield. I'll go and take Bhiksha. Now one doubt comes in our mind here. What is the highest state of a spiritual aspirant? You know the four orders we have been given, right? The first stage is Brahmacharya. Then from Brahmacharya, which is a student life, you come to Grihas, which is family life. Then Grihas, you come to Vanaprash, which is the what we call the retired life. You know, in marketing, as I told you, they call it what? Emptiness syndrome. That Vanaprash is the stage when the children leave the house and leaving the mother and father there. So at that stage, you're called Vanaprash. Then comes the higher stage when both separate and lead a life of renunciation, is called Sannyas. Arjuna wanted to take to Bhiksha, which means what? Life of Sannyas. So what is wrong? What is wrong? The reason he is taking Sannyas is to escape his duties, right? It is like a husband getting so much of problem in the house, he says, I'll go and take Sannyas. So the reason for taking Sannyas means you must be prepared. That's why all the four house orders of life, you notice they are all called ashramas. Brahmacharya, ashrama. Grihas, also ashrama. How can the Grihas household also become ashrama? How can the Grihas also be called ashrama? The Brahmacharya also is called ashrama. Sannyas also called ashrama. How come all four are called ashramas? Then what's the difference? Or what? How can a Grihas be called ashrama? A family life we call ashrama. Turn your house into an ashram. That's what he's saying. When you say turn your house into ashram, means what? Have the right attitude of your actions. You are taking care of your family. You are interacting with your neighbors, your relatives. You are going to work. That attitude must be correct. Therefore, the ashrama is the best life we have been given. Because why? In the Grihas ashrama, you meet all kinds of people, isn't it? You meet good people, you meet people whom you don't like, people who try to trouble you. So that is, on the contrary, teaching us how to get along with everything. If we in the Grihas ashram can know how to live our life, then to progress to Sannyas, isn't it going to be easy? Right? So the purpose of going through Brahmacharya Grihas is to train you for the Sannyas life. Because the word Sannyas itself means what? Nyas means to destroy. Sun means to destroy naturally. So you progress naturally. Otherwise you go to ashram and you have not taken care of your mind. In the ashram also, at Sannyas stage also, you do not know how to handle things. Because there also you will meet challenges. You go to ashram, who's there? Who's in the ashram? People only, isn't it? There are also people in ashram. You can't handle your family. How are you going to handle other people? Right? So, all these are to help us to progress to a natural state. So, don't go and jump the gun. Don't go and rush into Sannyas when you're mentally not prepared for it. Right? So, that is why people often criticize, if Arjuna wanted to take Sannyas, you should have let him go and take Sannyas. Why go and ask him to go and fight this battle? But Arjuna is taking Sannyas for the purpose of running away from his duties. That is the problem. That's why Krishna is telling him, you do your duties. Do your duties. So, here he says now in verse number 5, it is better for me to go and beg for food, take to a life of Sannyas, than go and fight my people. And he gives the reason why. He says, if I fight my people, if I kill them, I will get back my kingdom. I will get back all the comforts. So in the third line, he uses the word, you see, artha kama, the second word there, artha kama. Artha means all the possessions I will get back, all whatever my kingdom, everything I get back. Kama means all the pleasures and comforts of the kingdom. I don't have to go and sleep in the forest. I have a nice room to sleep in the palace. All the comforts I have, all the food I have, all that I will get back. But how will I enjoy whenever I think I have killed all my people and then I got all these enjoyments? While I'm enjoying everything in the palace, where will my mind be? On the blood of the relatives that I killed. My hands will be stained with the blood of my relatives. What kind of joy is there? What is the use of having all these enjoyments when my mind is in torment? So he says, for that reason, you know, it's better for me to leave this battlefield and go and live a life of sannyas. Okay. And finally, he also gives another excuse, right? So another excuse he gives, now he comes out with another option. Now you see, Arjuna is getting into a very dangerous territory. You see, if he stays and fights the battle, there is a plus and minus point. What is the plus point?
He upholds dharma.
If he stays and fights the battle, he does his duty as a kshatriya and he upholds dharma. What is the minus point?
He loses his family members.
He has to kill his beloved people. So stay on the battlefield has plus and minus point. Okay, very good. Run away from battle also got plus and minus point. What is the plus point?
He doesn't get killed
and he doesn't have to kill. What is the minus point?
Adharmic people lie. He didn't do his duty.
His duty is a kshatriya. So you give up your duty and you take someone else's duty, that is going against the code also. The code of your kshatriya code you don't follow, you go and take up somebody's duty. So stay and fight got plus and minus. Run away also got plus and minus. So now got four options suddenly. What to do now? Right? But now he also presents there another option now. Right? In verse number 6. He says now, with a new idea, now I do not know whether it is better we kill them or they kill us. So even more confusion. He says, I do not know which for us is better, whether we conquer them or they conquer us. That means what? I am even prepared to give up my life also. So five options now, he has got so confused, he doesn't know what to do now. Stay also got advantage, disadvantage. Run away also got advantage, disadvantage. Advantage, finally better. I cannot think better for me to give up my life. Suicide, that's what he's saying. Okay. Now comes a very important part in this Bhagavad Gita. It is now the time for Arjuna. He realizes that something is not correct. All the excuses he's given, Krishna has not even said anything, and Arjuna realizes there's some problem. So now in this beautiful verse, verse number 7, Arjuna surrenders. He accepts his problem and surrenders. And this is a very, very, very famous verse in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, verse 7. It is called the surrender verse. So we also can use this verse, recite it every day to also surrender everything to Lord, right? So I think those who are in the Gita Ashram, you all know how to recite this verse. But how many of you know how to recite this verse? 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay, so for the benefit of the rest of you, we will learn to recite this verse, which you can learn and recite as a prayer verse. Now you will notice that this verse also is different than the way we've recited chapter 12. Chapter 12 is written in a different meter. You will find 8 syllables and 4 lines. There are total 32 syllables. Here you will find 11 syllables in 4 lines. That's 44 syllables. So the recitation is slightly different. There are 2 types of meters here in the Bhagavad Gita. So we will learn how to recite. I will recite the first line, then you follow me. Okay? Karpanya dosho pahata swabhava. With more energy. Oh, lacking energy. Oh, sleeping already. Okay, once more again. Karpanya dosho pahata swabhava.
Karpanya dosho pahata swabhava.
Prachami tvam dharma samudacheta.
Prachami tvam dharma samudacheta.
Yakshreyishanishchitan bruhitan me. Shishyasteham shadimam tvam prapanam.
Shishyasteham shadimam tvam prapanam.
So here is where Arjuna says, I have a problem. What does he say? Karpanya dosho pahata swabhava. My swabhava, my nature is that of a warrior. I should know what to do. I come to this battlefield, I should be fighting. But instead of fighting, I am sitting down here crying. So my swabhava, my nature is upahata. It is overpowered by what? Karpanya. Karpanya means this very attachment. Because of my attachment for all my beloved people, because the thought of losing them, that has overpowered my very nature, my real nature. And thus it is a dosha. Dosha means a defect. There is something wrong with me. There is a defect. Right? Defect. Dosha is not idli dosa. This is dosha. Means defect. So there is something. There is a taint on me. Something is not correct. That means what? He is admitting that I have a problem. Right? So until and unless the person admits he has a problem, then only he can surrender. So what does he say? Now he tells Krishna, Prachami, please tell me now. Prachami, please instruct me. Okay? Because Dharma Samudha Cheta. Cheta means mind. Cheta is mind. Samudha means confusion. Confusion of what? My Dharma. Now, what is Arjuna's confusion of Dharma? I do not know. I am here on this battlefield, but I have two Dharmas. What are my two Dharmas? As a soldier, as a Kshatriya, I should be fighting. That is my one Dharma. I know that is my Dharma. But I also have another Dharma. What is that Dharma? Respecting my elders, respecting my gurus. That also is my Dharma, isn't it? So we also, throughout the day, we play many roles. In the house, we have different Dharmas. You go to office, you play a different role. Then you come back home, you might be a member of your society or community or something, you play another role, right? Throughout one day or throughout a week, we may have different dharmas. But here now Arjuna is facing his relatives, his guru, his elders. Now he's confused now. Do I fight with them or do I worship them? I have two dharmas now, I'm confused now, which one should I follow now? So because my mind is confused, Prachami, Krishna, you please tell me now. And you see, many people go to guru. You know, nowadays it's a fashion, guru shopping, you know. Jump from one guru, not happy, deep guru, go to that guru, go guru shopping. But most of the people go to guru and surrender for what? Everybody is very proud. I have guru, you know, guru. So we surrender to guru. But ask for what? My children not married, guru, do some prayers. I want promotion in the company, I'm not getting promotion, do some prayers, you know. So in the end, what do you surrender for? Back to material comfort. So what do you think the guru is going to give you?
Material.
That what you want, you surrender for that, I give you that, isn't it? How many people go to guru and say, I want Bhagavad Gita knowledge, right? Very, very, very rare. So here, Arjuna is surrendering, but what is he asking for? What is he asking for? He surrenders, he has to ask for something, isn't it? What is he asking for?
To know which is his Dharma, which he is supposed to follow.
Correct. So what is he saying? Shreyas. He uses the word Shreyas. You see in the third line, Yak Shreya. So, Shreyas here, there is basically two parts for us in this world. We have the path of Shreyas and there is the path of Shreya. So, what is the difference with the path of Shreyas and the path of Prayas? Shreyas is said to be the path of the good. Prayas is said to be the path of the pleasant. It's a very pleasant path. But, we must ask ourselves, sometimes the pleasant part is not the good part. And it is often the good part is never the pleasant part or the easy part, isn't it? So the pleasant part is what? To indulge in the world, right? That's why, because all of us want instant happiness. So where can you get instant happiness? In the world. So that is a path of prayers, quick instant happiness. But whether it is good for you or not, that is questionable. But when you go on the spiritual path, it is a good path. It will lead to your highest good. That's why Shreyas means the ultimate, the highest good. It may not be the pleasant part, it may not be the easiest part, but it is for your good. So here when Arjuna surrenders, he is not asking for prayers. He says, Yak Shreyish, I want Shreyas. Tell me, Krishna, that which action should I do that will give me the highest good? Whether I do my dharma as a soldier or I do my dharma as a, what you call, a relative and a shishya, right? So which is correct for me? And that also he adds in one more word, nishchitam. Nishchitam means tell me one definite answer. Don't tell me, Arjuna, this also is good, but I think, you know, that also is good, you know. Or you think, maybe that also is good. Arjuna is saying, I am already so confused. On top of that, if you don't give me one firm answer, you make me even more confused. So, don't beat about the bush, just tell me one answer. So, Yat Shreyasham Nishchitam Bruhitanme. And why should you do this? Why should you tell me now? Because Shishyasteham. I am now declaring myself as your disciple. Earlier, what was the relationship of Krishna Arjuna? Krishna is the charioteer. Arjuna is the owner of the chariot. Who is the boss? Who listens to who? Krishna has to listen to Arjuna. Krishna has to take instructions from Arjuna. But now Arjuna is saying, you are no more my driver. Now you are my
teacher,
you are my guru. So I am declaring myself as a shishya. So Krishna can only become a teacher when Arjuna has decided to become a student. So prapannam. Prapannam means I am surrendering myself to you. I am surrendering myself at your feet. So can you see how this whole verse becomes a very beautiful prayer verse? In the morning when we get up, I am surrendering myself to you, Krishna. You be my charioteer, you be my driver, my guru, my everything, right? Because I am confused. As I'm going out, I don't know what I'm going to do. But I hope that you guide me throughout my day, right? So constantly we can also say this prayer whenever we are confused, whenever we are in a state of doubts, we cannot decide, surrender. Use this as a surrender prayer verse. So, here are... So, very important point to note. See, there's one story told about Swamiji, you know. So, this Swamiji was a very popular Swamiji, very famous. And many people tried to get him to come and give talks at their town. So, these particular people were trying, 1-2 years, could not get the Swamiji. Finally, they got hold of him. He says, I got 4 days, I can spare you. So, these 4 days, I can come and I'll give you a talk at your town hall. So they were so excited, they made announcements, they booked the town hall, they sent out flyers and put up decorations, everything. And the day came, so the Swamiji came. So first day he went, he sat on the stage. He asked all the audience, do you know what I have come to talk about? So they said, yes, Swamiji, we know. If you all know, then I'm wasting my time here, I'm going away. So he left the stage. So they all got shocked. They said, he's only come for 4 days. First day already we gave him wrong answer and he left. That means we got 3 days left. Let's see what happens tomorrow. So next day he came again. He went to the stage, he sat down. Do you all know what I have come to talk about? This time they were smarter. They said, no, Swamiji. If you all don't know, then I'm wasting my time. I also better go back. Again he left and went off. Now they said, 2 days gone already. Balance 2 more days. Tell him yes also cannot, no also cannot. What to tell him on the third day? So they decided, half of you say yes, half of you say no. Let us see what he does. Okay, very good. Third day he comes, he goes on the stage, sits down. Do you all know what I have come to speak about? So half of them say, yes, Swamiji. The other side half, no, Swamiji. Okay, very easy. Those who know, instruct those who don't know and I'm going. So third day also gone. Now left one last day. We say yes, cannot. We say no, cannot. Half say yes, half say no, also cannot. What are we going to tell him on the last day? So big discussion, going on. One more day left. If we give him the wrong answer, he'll leave. The whole 4 days are wasted. So finally, one man stood up. He said, tomorrow when the Swamiji comes, you all just keep quiet. If he asks you, do you know why what I've come to talk about? Everybody just be quiet. Okay? Fourth day came. He went up stage. He sat down. Do you all know what I've come to speak about? Do you all know what I've come to speak about? Answer. Means what? Now you're ready to listen. When you say we know means what? Arrogance, pride. When you say I don't know means what? Not interested to listen. But when you are silent, that means what? You are ready to listen. So next time if I ask you, do you know what I've come to talk about? So Arjuna now falls silent. Silent means, and he declared himself, Shishya Steham, please instruct me Krishna, because I really don't know. So now, phase one, he has suffered the problem of samsara. Here now, phase two, he has admitted his problem. Phase three, he has declared himself in honesty and humility, he has surrendered prapanam to Krishna. Now obviously, Krishna has got to start some teachings, which will come in verse 11. Now let us look what happens now after this. Any questions so far? No questions so far. So in verse number 8 now. And that's why when you say you are a shishya, when you say I'm a disciple, what does it mean? What do you mean by disciple? You say I'm a disciple. This guru I have, no, I'm his disciple. What do you mean by that? Disciple means following a discipline. The discipline which is set forward by your guru and the scriptures. It's no use to say I am his disciple and whatever the guru tells you, you don't even bother to listen. Then why call yourself a disciple? You are not following any discipline. If you call yourself a disciple, you must follow a particular discipline which the guru instructs you, which the scriptures instruct you. So that's why the Bhagavad Gita, if we are a disciple, we say we are a Krishna disciple, we are a Bhagavad Gita disciple. What do you mean? You should follow the teachings which are put forward in the scriptures. Otherwise, how do you call yourself a disciple? So that is what we mean by the stricter sense. Shishyas means disciple, is to follow the teachings. Now what do we see in verse number 8? Okay, in verse number 8, as Arjuna is confessing his grief, is getting very intense, and he is also thinking of what solutions. So here he indicates to Krishna that I am surrendering to you. Why? Because Indriyanam, whatever grief has overpowered my very Indriyas, means my senses, right? My eyes cannot see and all my senses are overpowered by this grief. I am unable to think clearly. So I am therefore declaring myself as your disciple. And he says here in this mama apunyat means I don't see any method. That means I have thought about everything but I cannot find any method to remove this grief. It has become so intense in me. So he says, I also thought about it that even if I get back this kingdom, even that is not going to remove my grief. Right? So whatever solutions I put forward, if I run away, that also is not going to remove my grief. If I get back the kingdom by killing my own people, that also is not going to remove. So whichever way I look at it, my grief is not going to be removed. So what is that one, what is that answer that you can give me that will help me overcome this feeling of grief? And what else he says? Rajyam Suranam Apichadipatyam. That if I get even the lordship over the, become a Deva, but if I become a Deva also, even that happiness also will not give me and will not remove my grief. Right? That's why this human birth is so very important. You know what is the importance of human birth compared to Deva birth? Many people aspire. There are some temples here that give you that for a fee will do prayers for you that you can book a place in heaven. If you want, you can do the booking. Right? But what is the difference of being a Deva and a human? Even the Devas, want to become humans. What is the advantage then of this human birth? Even better than devas.
It's a lesson.
Huh?
Lesson.
Sorry?
Human birth is a lesson.
Lesson in what?
Going through it.
Going through it?
Going through all sorts of things.
All sorts of experience. So what is the advantage of a human birth compared to a birth of a deva?
Deva's birth is more comfortable.
Comfortable life. Isn't that nice, having a comfortable life? No?
No. No challenge.
Definitely no.
Choice.
No challenge.
So no challenge.
Must, yeah, you must have a life where you can
have challenges. Let me take you to chapter 9. You'll see the answer there in chapter 9. Verse 21, page 172. Here, Krishna talks about those people who aspire to go into the higher lokas. You know how many higher lokas there are there? This loka is called Bhu Loka. Here, Bhuva, Swaha, Maha, Jana, Tapa. So there are six on top of this earth. So the higher loka you go means what? The more the pleasure, the more the enjoyment, the more the entertainment. So the more punyam you've done means you'll go to higher and higher lokas. So more good things you do, higher lokas you go. But what happens, this verse is saying, your loka, your punyam you've done is finite or infinite?
Finite.
Therefore, when you go to higher lokas, that period of enjoyment will be finite or infinite? Finite. After that finishes, all your punyam, what happens? Come back down to earth again. So that is only a transit point. Like you get a transit visa, you go somewhere for 2 weeks, your visa expires, what happens? You have to come back. And it is said that only from human birth you can go to moksha. Even from deva birth you cannot go to moksha, you have to come back. So understand this, all the punyams that you are doing to aspire to become a deva, you will become a deva, you will enjoy that punyam, but you still have to come back here again. Right? So that enjoyment is a temporary enjoyment. But this human birth, yes.
So when you say that all of us have a chance to become devas, first time
hearing. Who are the devas? How did they become devas? How did they become devas? Because of that human birth which they perform so many good punyams. So as a result, they get to go and occupy that position for a temporary period of time. Then when they have to give up their position, somebody else who has done the punyams also will go up and occupy that position. So the devas are constantly changing. Ultimately, they come back to human form.
The next body, which is, I mean, they enjoy that birth and then
yeah.
They are reborn again.
So why are they reborn? You know about the Sanchit karmas? The past karmas have not been exhausted. So you finish up the good karmas, the punyam, but because you still have your warehouse of karmas, you still have to come back here again. So that's why earth is called Karma Bhumi. It's called Karma Bhumi means it is the only place where you can do action and earn merit. Whereas heavens are called Bhoga Bhumi. If you go to heaven, there is only enjoyment. Even if you commit any mistakes, if you do anything wrong, you don't get any demerits. You do any good also, you don't get merits. You do demerit also, you don't get any demerits. That is called Bhoga Bhumi. But when you come back to earth, then every action counts. Okay? Then if you don't go up there, don't worry, there's still another seven more lokas below. Which is Atala, Vitala, Sutala, Talatala, Mahatala, Patala, Rasatala, one more Rasatala. Seven lokas below. So if you do a lot of bad deeds, where you go?
Down.
You do a lot of good deeds, where you go? If you do mixed half and half, you come for Gita classes. That means you remain on earth. Basically what it means is you remain on earth. So half good, half bad deeds.
But from what you are saying, it means nothing is perfect. You are born here, you go up, 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 but you can also come down and go down, down, down.
So the trick is how to get out of this circle of 14 lokas. That is the solution. Because as long as we stay here, we go up, we come down. We go down, we come back. Right? It's like a merry-go-round. Our duty, our mission is what? How to get out of this merry-go-round.
So you can also get double promotion, triple promotion.
Yeah, yeah. You do double good thing, you get double promotion. So higher lokas you keep going. So we must understand that that is not moksha. That is the most important thing. People think I go and become a deva, that is moksha. That is not moksha. That will bring you back again to earth again.
You get still promoted.
Sorry?
Indra.
Yeah, Indra also is never in moksha. And Indra, they say also, he also is always worried. Huh? Sorry? No, his position also can be challenged. They can change also. They are all there temporary. So understand, going to the higher heavens is not moksha. It is only a temporary transit point and then you come back. Okay?
And how to go to moksha?
Ah, this is the biggest key. How to go to moksha? See.
I'll explain this. Everybody is interested in moksha.
Okay.
We go back again to the three types of karmas that we have. Okay? This is Sanchit Karma. This is your warehouse of karmas. Okay? Plus and minus are all here. This is your Prarabdha Karmas, which is taken out from Sanchit Karma. Again, plus and minus. Because of this Prarabdha Karmas, you have taken the particular type of birth to exhaust your past punyam papam. So how do you exhaust your past punyam? Through all the sukha experiences that you go through. How do you exhaust your papam? Through all the dukkha experiences that you go through, right? And the type of body you are given also depends on what papam punyam you have to suffer. That particular type of body will be allocated to you. Whether healthy body, sick body, what type of environment, parents, this, that, a lot of things are determined. Okay? That is all in Prarabdha. Your date of birth, date of death, all determined here. Then we have Agami. Okay? Which is the new, fresh karmas that you create now. Okay? Which can go back into the Sanchit. So, over this have you got any control? Over this have you got any control?
No.
Over this have you got any control?
Yes.
So, our concentration must be on here now. Okay? How can, okay, now that I've taken birth, I have to exhaust this. I cannot stop. Even God will not burn away this Prarabdha Karmas. What I can do is ensure that I don't create new karmas. Okay? So, wrong actions we all know what we shouldn't do. Okay? Don't lie, don't cheat and all that. That we know. Okay? Now, what about good actions? How do I do a good action that I don't get another prast, another merit point? Because if I get another merit point, which means what happened? It goes into my Sanchit Karmas and again I have to go up in heaven, do something and come back again. So, now we think very carefully. How do I turn my actions into negative, into how you say, neutral? Neutral. So the only way is the attitude has to change, not the action. When your attitude changes that every action is for surrender, it is for God, that it is not due to my ego, due to my anger, my envy, my pride, my jealousy, then that action becomes what we call, just now, neutral. Right? Once it's neutral, do you have any more agami karmas?
No.
No. Prarabdha, you wait until the body exhausts and falls to death. Sanchita karma. So once you don't have agami karmas,
yes,
you live your life, you are known as a jivan mukta. Mukta means to be free, jivan means from this birth. That means not that you have died yet, but you are able to go through all the ups and downs of life. They do not affect you anymore. So all your actions are pure. They are done as a surrender to God. Okay? Once the prarabdha karmas are burnt, there are no more agami karmas because you are a jivan mukta. It is only God who will burn away all your sanchit karmas. Only by the grace of God, through a jivan mukta, all the sanchit karmas are burnt. Right? Then what happens? You become what is called with deha mukti. Deha means body. With deha means without a body. So then you don't have to come back and take another birth.
neither you have to go to heaven, neither you have to go to hell, neither you have to come back to Goloka. So the whole key or the essence of the Bhagavad Gita is how to change your attitude. Actions remain the same, change your attitude, and therefore do not create any more agami karmas. There is a verse given in Bhagavad Gita which explains this partially. If you go to chapter 4, chapter 4, verse number 37, page 96. This explains partially what I've just explained to you. Chapter 4, verse 37, page 96. For as the blazing fire reduces the fuel to ashes, now look at that, ashes is plural. It's not, fuel. Fuel is plural. It means what? If you do a Havan Yajna, you put all kinds of things into it, right? You put firewood, you put grains, you put all kinds of things into it. At the end, when the fire burns everything, what do you see? Only ashes. That means everything burns to one, right? You can't see wood, you can't see grains. And even so, the fire of knowledge reduces all actions to ashes. When you equipped with the right knowledge to guide your actions as a surrender to God, what happens? All your actions are reduced to ashes. When firewood is reduced to ashes, what does it mean? Can you burn it anymore? It cannot burn anymore. So what it means here is your actions also are reduced to ashes. They cannot sprout anymore karmas. They are totally gone. It is like the roasted seed. In our Upanishads, this example is given. When you roast a seed, what happens? It doesn't have the capacity to germinate anymore. It cannot produce anymore. That is the Jivan Mukta. That is the state of Jivan Mukta. It's compared to a roasted seed. So that is the only way if you learn how to correct your attitude. As long as you don't correct your attitude, let me give you an example. I give donation. I donate 1,000 ringgit. But I donate with the ego, with pride. I want everybody to come and thank me. So please announce my name. Okay? That is one person. Another person donates 20 ringgit, but he quietly goes and puts it in the altar and walks away. Now, who is the one who has done karma yoga? The 1,000 ringgit person or the 20 ringgit person? The 20 ringgit. Therefore, action is not the problem. The attitude to action creates the problem. You see? The other person expected people to come and thank him. So people come and thank him. It will happen. That means you have created a seed now. Right? But if you don't have any expectation, the seed is burned to ashes. Yes?
You don't tell anybody.
You don't?
You don't tell anybody.
Right.
You think about it.
So there's some pride in you, right?
Yeah.
So once that pride comes in, the ego comes in, then you have created.
You don't tell anybody.
But still your thoughts are there.
Yeah.
So that also becomes a, you've done a good action, but because you've done it out of pride, so then there is a merit there for you then. You see? So that's why the Bhagavad Gita keeps on concentrating on the thoughts, never the action. Okay? Sorry? Of course. Subtle pride, but it still accumulates something. There's still accumulation of a karmic effect. At thought level?
Yeah, but even the subtle pride doesn't make you feel good. You feel good. It's not pride,
you feel good. If you feel good in giving, it's okay. But you see, you appreciate, but you think of it as a offering to God. That means, you see, how is the best way to give donation? What should be the attitude in your mind when you give donation?
I'm offering it to God.
What is the best way to give donation? Normally, when we give donation, we think we are doing that person a favor. But how should you look at donation?
It's
that person is doing me a favor by offering me an opportunity to give donation. You see? Not that I am doing him a favor. He is doing me a favor by giving me an opportunity to serve him or her. So the whole aspect of pride and ego is gone. Like, I am not helping him, he is helping me. That is the attitude. Okay?
But even there also you are expecting something.
No, you are not expecting any thanks, but you are grateful to that person to help you. You are not expecting, you are giving, but you are grateful. You are not, you see, if you are expecting, then you expect the person to thank you. You give him some money, and then that fellow doesn't thank you, what happens? You feel somehow agitated somehow. Why he didn't thank me? So have that attitude that God has brought this person in order for me to serve him. So I am serving you, I am not expecting anything from you. So, you understand now the thought is very important, the thought behind your action.
Actually, like actions, say that giving to God. Is it giving to God or giving to like needy children, which
right.
is much better than
right.
giving to a temple?
Any
I
fact,
always believe that giving to needy children is much better than putting money in the temple.
See, this question has always been asked that we go and donate and build up so fantastic, beautiful temples, spend millions of dollars, and then there are a lot of needy people on the road, don't have food to eat. Why don't we give them? Any form of seva is good in the sense that even when we construct temples, there are many people who go to temple for what? They have food. They are not hungry people. But they are looking for some peace of mind. So even if you contribute money to, see, today we come to this ashram. Had the this ashram not been constructed, where would we be holding classes? Under the banana tree, isn't it? So there is a purpose for everything. There are people who are seeking knowledge. There are people who are seeking peace of mind. They want to, they love to go to temple. Even if we contribute that, a temple is built. That also is a seva also. We should not look at that, why should we give here and then there are poor people. Any form of giving, the right attitude must be there. I am serving, that's all. Now, I will stop here just to explain one more thing. Just one or two more announcements. You want to switch this off? I'm planning to have this Bhagavad Gita camp. I'm not sure how many of you are interested. It's on the 2nd, 3rd and 4th of January 2015. So it's a 2-night, 3-day camp. We go in on a Friday and we check out